What advice, if any, could we learn from Ronald Reagan in terms of what we should be doing as Americans today? Well, we're going to talk with a professor who's written a lot of books on Ronald Reagan as well as articles, and his name is Dr. Paul Kanger. And in fact, he even wrote a book recently called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Now, just recently, Dr. Kanger wrote an op-ed on the shooting down of the Malaysian flight that happened just last week as of this recording, comparing President Obama's reaction to the shoot down with President Reagan's reaction to the Soviet shooting down Korean Flight 007, which occurred in 1983. So we welcome back to the program Dr. Paul Kanger, and as I say, we're going to begin with the comparison between MH17 versus Korean Flight 007, Obama versus Reagan, and then we'll kind of ease into this whole issue of, hey, what could Reagan have to say about modern America, and we could learn from what he would have to say. So, Dr. Kanger, welcome back to the program.
Great. Hey, thanks, Jerry.
All right. So you wrote recently, this generation has its KAL-007. The stunning downing of Malaysian Flight 17 is strikingly similar to the shock of September 1st, 1983, when the Russians downed a Korean passenger airliner, Flight 007, and they killed a lot of people, 269 passengers, and a similar number were killed just recently in over Ukraine. So what are your comparisons? Why do you bring up these two flights and compare them? Is it basically the way the president handled them?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one comparison. Also, too, it's just so similar. You had an Asian airliner in both cases. They're both shot down by Russians. Let's just put it vaguely as Russians, right?
Okay, sure.
The Russian government in both cases strongly denied any involvement.
Okay.
And viciously attacked anybody who suggested that there was any involvement. You had Americans on board each, although I'm not sure now how many were on the Malaysian flight. At one point, They estimated a couple dozen Americans.
Yeah, they were saying 23, and then now all you hear is one. I don't get it.
That's all I've heard. In the KAL 007, the Korean airliner, there were 61 Americans.
Oh, including a U.S. congressman.
There were more there because that flight actually took off from New York.
Right.
And then it was headed towards Seoul and was going over Anchorage, over Alaska. And in that case, I mean, it's still not exactly clear what happened with KAL 007, but it seems like the computer on the plane's guidance system must have malfunctioned or wasn't set correctly. It strayed into Soviet airspace, and you know, what the Russians denied, We learned, the Reagan administration learned through audio that we had through electronic surveillance at the National Security Agency in Fort Meade, Maryland. We were able to actually hear the Russian military pilots communicating with one another, saying, you know, I've got it in my sights, and then saying, I'm going to fire, and then firing, and then saying, I got it, and communicating back and forth. And so at that point, the Reagan administration, the United States, presented that, and Yuri Andropov, who was the head of the Soviet Union, and I might add, had just been the boss of Vladimir Putin at the KGB.
Mm.
At that point, Yuri Andropov, they had to fess up, they had to admit that it happened.
What was Reagan's reaction when he found out?
Well, Reagan was informed by Bill Clark.
Oh, your friend.
And I've talked on your show about Bill Clark before. Bill Clark was Reagan's single most influential advisor. He ran Reagan's National Security Council. I'm Clark's biographer. I wrote a biography of Bill Clark called The Judge. They called him Judge Clark. He had been a judge before he joined the Reagan administration. In fact, Reagan had appointed him to the California Supreme Court when Reagan was governor. But he was Reagan's right-hand man through all of 1982, most of 1983. He's the guy that wrote the National Security Decision Directives to take down the Soviet Union.
Wow.
He was the guy who was the front man on all of this stuff. And so Clark telephoned Ronald Reagan right away. Reagan was at his ranch in the Santa Ynez Mountains, and which was north of Santa Barbara, about 15 to 20 miles.
Okay.
And Clark told him, he said, I just got word from Casey, Bill Casey, the CIA director, that the Soviets may have shot down an airliner, possibly Korean. And Reagan's first response to that, Jerry, he said, Bill, let's pray that it's not true.
Yeah.
And they did. They paused and they prayed that it wasn't true.
You mean they actually prayed together?
They did. They did. They actually prayed.
Wow.
I asked that to Clark. In fact, I think the first time that Bill Clark told me this story, Jerry, might have been in August 2001, which was the first time that I interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed him for what would become my book, God and Ronald Reagan, on Reagan's faith. So I was interviewing him on Reagan's faith, and I was interviewing Clark in the chapel that Clark built with his own money on his ranch in Central California. And Clark was giving me examples of Reagan's faith and how Reagan prayed. And at that point, he said, you remember the Cal 007? I said, yeah. And he said, well, you know, Reagan said, Bill, let's pray that this isn't true. And I would add here, too, not to digress, but another thing that Clark told me was that Reagan wanted to be awakened at any time, middle of the night, when news came in of an American military serviceman dying or being killed overseas.
Wow.
And he felt that was so important that it merited waking up the president in the middle of the night. And Clark learned from Reagan. Reagan said, when you call me with this, I always want the name and phone number of the closest relation.
Oh, wow.
Mother, father, wife, whatever. And then Reagan would call these people one by one. And Clark said that Reagan would always say in these conversations, would you like to pray with me?
Wow.
He would say to the widow or the mother or the father. And Clark said that almost always the people would say yes. And Reagan would stop and pray with him on the phone. And so in this case, Reagan said on Cal 007, Bill, let's pray it's not true. But it turned out it was true. The Soviets were involved.
Yeah, in fact, you wrote this. They prayed, but it was true. The Soviets never let prayer get in the way of their work. And by the way, just I like that way you put it. Quick question.
You know that well. I mean,
yes,
you know,
absolutely.
The way that atheist communism was, I mean, people who were praying in the way of the Soviets' work, sometimes people would be praying in the churches that the Soviets were in the process of smashing up.
Oh.
And so the Soviets would club people that were praying in the way of their work.
By the way,
they weren't about to let prayer get in the way of their work again this time.
Sure. Just two quick questions for you in reference to some of the things you said earlier. Bill Clark, the chapel that you were talking about on a ranch, was that on Bill Clark's ranch or was that on President Reagan's ranch?
Yeah, it's actually on Clark's ranch,
which
is near Paso Robles, California. That's about a two-hour drive north of Ronald Reagan's ranch. And interestingly, too, Clark used to tell me that Ronald Reagan felt an almost mystical spiritual sense when he was at that ranch. And I don't know if you've ever been there, but the ranch is so high up in the air, overlooking the Pacific Ocean, that sometimes it's above cloud coverage.
Wow.
And Clark referred to that as Reagan's open cathedral.
Huh.
He said Reagan felt in touch with God when he was at that ranch. I mean, not that he didn't feel that he wasn't in touch with God elsewhere, but just the sense of nature, the environment, and of the beauty of and majesty of God's creation. Reagan felt an even closer sense of the Creator when he was there.
You know, Paul, I want to commend you for something. You have done so much research on Ronald Reagan, and here's the thing. Certainly not the left, but many, many people today appreciate Ronald Reagan and feel like this was one of the, you know, this is probably the greatest president in my lifetime, and that's even what a lot of people feel. But you have done so much research uncovering that behind the scenes was Ronald Reagan's quiet Christian faith, and it was an important part of who he was. So I think it's very important, and thank you for getting that word out about
that.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for giving me a platform like this to tell more people about it, because a lot of people aren't interested about it in it, and also you report these things in books, but you know, if people don't buy the book, and only about 10,000 people ever buy the book, how else are they going to hear from it unless media helps?
Yeah,
and so I thank you for helping in that.
Oh, my pleasure. And in the meantime, this is a little mutual admiration society here. Where do I send the $20? No, I'm just kidding. But you've also done so much research about the other side, which is the Soviets, the communists, and the godless atheism and so forth. Now, going back to the day when Reagan found out and understood that indeed the Soviets had shot down this jetliner just filled with civilians, he was furious and he said, quote unquote, "Those were innocent civilians, darn those Russians." So he was very upset. What was let's jump to recent times, July 2014, what was President Obama's reaction when he first learned about the Malaysian flight, which was also filled with civilians?
Well, and let me add real quickly.
Sure.
As soon as Reagan learned that, he hopped on a helicopter at the ranch, went to Point Mugu Naval Air Station in California, and before he even got on Air Force One to go back to Washington, he called a press conference where he blasted what the Soviets did, called it brutal, callous, barbaric, heinous, a terrorist act, and he said it was all made worse by the fact that the Russians, quote, so flagrantly lie.
Wow. Yeah.
And then he did a radio address on September 3rd, 2 days later, actually a day later, September 5th, he gives a nationally televised address where he calls it a crime, a massacre. Bill Clark goes out, gives speeches, calls it a mass murder, a massacre, all kinds of things. So Reagan really let him have it over this. Now, in the case of Obama, first of all, we're still not even clear, Jerry, how exactly Obama found out about this, about the Malaysian MH17 downing. There were reports the first day or two after it happened that Vladimir Putin called him and informed him about it. So I don't know if that's true or not. It's not totally clear.
Wow.
But Obama went to an event in Delaware. And he goes there and he kind of makes a perfunctory statement where he acknowledged the tragedy that had happened with the Malaysian flight. And keep in mind, at this point, I believe it was Reuters had reported that there were upwards of 24 Americans killed. I think they said 23 at that point. So at that point, we think there's a couple dozen Americans on board, or at least a lot of people think that. But Obama acknowledges that and then immediately goes into this sort of almost stand-up routine where he's cracking jokes and talking about the Bidens and, the Biden family, and look how good-looking he is, and look who's saying, "Hey, so-and-so, look at you, how are you doing?" And goes on. It's kind of a very jocular, unserious, light moment. He goes on and he attacks Republicans for not funding an airport. And then after that, and by the way, even people like Piers Morgan of CNN, Piers Morgan tweeted, quote, "Wow, President Obama massively dropped the ball just now. 23 Americans killed," and he says, "it looks like a terrible tragedy," and then goes back to jokes. Well, not only did he go back to jokes, after he leaves Delaware, he gets back on a plane and he flies to New York. He doesn't helicopter to the closest naval air base and get back to Washington in the Situation Room. He goes on to New York for two fundraisers.
Wow.
To raise money for Democrats. So his response to this was completely different from Reagan.
Well, when you were talking earlier about how Ronald Reagan had this standing policy that if any serviceman were to die anywhere in the world, wake him up and give him the name of the widow and the phone number and so forth, so he could call in his condolences, I couldn't help but think of Benghazi, because there was a situation in 2012 where, you know, we don't know exactly what the president knew or didn't know and so forth, but we do know that somebody made the order to stand down. That is, in fact, there are two men that are real heroes that night, because apparently they saved a lot of lives by disobeying the orders they received, and they did get into a gunfight with the bad guys. They ultimately died, but it was over the course of many hours that they finally died. And because they stood their ground, even though they were ordered not to, lives were saved and people were able to get out of that compound in Benghazi. And but where was the president at that time? And then when they honored the dead a week or two later, they told lies about a video, that it was all a video's fault. And then the guy who made that video is in jail and has been since, you know, on an unrelated charge. But it's just, comparisons between the two are just dumbfounding.
Yeah, and a lot of that was Hillary Clinton, right, who infamously said, "What difference does it make?" And I remember the day after it happened, or the day that it happened, that it was reported, I remember pulling my two teenage sons aside, and we were watching the press conference with Hillary Clinton blaming it on a video. And I remember the pastor at my church coming in his Sunday sermon and blasting this supposed idiot who made this video and thus caused all this problem by hating on the Muslims. Right? It turns out it wasn't that at all. But, and also, too, Jerry, with Ronald Reagan, even before the attack on the military barracks in Beirut, the Marine barracks in October 1983, where 241 Marines died, Clark was National Security Advisor before that. And Clark told me that Reagan wanted to know of any deaths that happened in Beirut long before that, because Reagan had put those boys there. He felt a special responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, if any of them got killed, and there were sporadic killings of our boys over there, mm-hmm. you know, well before that awful bombing in October 1983, and so Reagan doubly wanted to know if any of these guys died, because he felt a sense of responsibility for it.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting when you think about Ronald Reagan and what he would have to say for modern America. He took over at a time when we were at a very low spot, but I think we're worse now than we were at the time he took over.
Yes. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, certainly we are culturally with, Jimmy Carter did a lot of bad things to the economy and foreign policy, and so did Barack Obama, but Carter didn't do things to the culture that Obama has done through abortion and gay marriage and other things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The economy, I think, is even worse now. One of our economists here at Grove City College, Tracy Miller, has just written a piece that we're going to be sending out through the Center for Vision and Values. Miller has calculated that Obama's first 5 years are the worst 5-year economic record of any president since the Great Depression.
Wow.
There's no other presidency. This would be a two-term president to get 5 years. None of them has had nearly as bad of an average economic growth rate as Obama has had over his first 5 years. It's been just abysmal. And of course, I'm sure Obama will still continue to try to blame it on Bush. He got reelected by successfully doing that. But 5 years into it, it seems pretty ridiculous to still try to blame it on Bush.
All right, we're talking right now with Dr. Paul Kanger, K-E-N-G-O-R, and he has written many books and writes many different editorials and so forth, but the newest book that he has is called 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. Is there a website for that particular book or a website you want to plug?
And then there's not, but if you want to find it, just go to amazon.com.
Okay, and you use the number 11 as opposed to spelling out the word. So how about if you give us a few insights, what Ronald Reagan would have to teach us, including our current president and including those who are hoping or aspiring to run for office in 2014 and 2016. Can Reagan help us get out of the wilderness?
Yeah, right. Well, one thing that's maybe connected to what we're talking about here is that Ronald Reagan had a be not afraid attitude towards evil.
Yeah.
And when he saw something unjust, immoral, that he thought was evil, when he came across a bad regime with a bad Russian leader, Reagan wasn't afraid to speak truth to that regime, against that evil. Even before Yuri Andropov, Leonid Brezhnev, and then after Andropov, Konstantin Chernenko, even Gorbachev, who Reagan liked. I mean, Reagan didn't stop while Gorbachev was president talking about the evils of communism. Barack Obama is doing just the opposite with Vladimir Putin. I mean, he's accommodating him. There has been no Cal 007-like response that Obama has done toward the Russians right now. And not even, I mean, look, he has no proof that Vladimir Putin ordered this, and I don't think Putin did, but certainly here at the very least, this is an opportunity to condemn aggressive Russian behavior in the Ukraine and other areas where the Russians are acting badly. That's what Reagan did with Cal. He said this is a symptom of Russian aggressive behavior elsewhere in the world and elsewhere in recent history. So he used that opportunity to condemn that. Obama should do more of the same, but I don't think he will, because I don't think that Obama gets this in the gut the way that Ronald Reagan did.
How about the Middle East?
Well, on the Middle East, with Gaza in particular, Israel right now.
And not just that, but then also Iraq. We see the plight of the Christians. You see what's happening there. It seems like the Arab Spring, so-called, has turned into the Arab winter, especially for anybody that disagrees with them, including moderate Muslims. Everywhere you look.
That's a very interesting thought. How exactly would Reagan react to in particular, the purging and the fleeing of Christians in the Middle East right now, especially in ancient Christian countries like Syria? And I think Reagan would be pretty horrified by it. And Reagan, you know, they call Reagan the great communicator because he sees these ideas and he voiced them. He used the bully pulpit of the presidency to give voice to them and turn them into an international issue.
Mm-hmm.
And Reagan would have probably been all over that. Reagan would have probably talked about and condemned that so much that it would be a subject of conversation in every home in America.
Mm-hmm.
But with Obama, again, you kind of get an occasional perfunctory statement about how sad it is, the human rights abuses in the Middle East. Obama hasn't turned that into a personal issue, a kind of a personal crusade in the way that Ronald Reagan would have.
Yeah, and there's also a kind of a moral equivalence. You know, well, there's been bad things done on both sides. Well, wait a minute now. Okay,
right.
Let's just take the Christians in Mosul. All right, here's, I believe it's the second largest city in Iraq. Iraq, we shed all that blood to liberate the people of Iraq, and here we are 2 or 3 or 4 years later, and it's a nightmare, not only for Christians, it's a nightmare for whatever Jews are left, but it's certainly a nightmare as well for moderate Muslims who stand in the way of this particular radical form of Islam. But for these Christians who were there hundreds and hundreds of years before, you know, Muhammad had even been born, to now being told from their ancient city of Mosul, you either leave or you convert to Islam, or you pay these heavy, heavy taxes, or we will kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole destruction of Christianity right now throughout the Middle East, which is really on steroids.
Yeah,
you probably had Nina Shea on your show before.
I've had her colleague Paul Marshall. Absolutely.
Yeah, Paul Marshall is great. We've had both of them to Grove City College.
Good.
And I mean, they're really on this. They chronicle this better than anybody else. Really, this conversation with you has really gotten me to thinking about this. I mean, Ronald Reagan would really have given voice to this. He would have saw this as an absolute calamity and would have probably seized it and made it into a major public issue. Obama has not. Again, he'll occasionally say a thing here and there, almost because, you know, he's kind of required to say it. But with Obama, it's not a major issue,
mm-hmm.
not in the way that the HHS mandate is, or gay marriage, or some of these other issues. And look, you know, this is how the American public voted, and we're getting what we voted for. You reap what you sow.
Mm. All right, Ronald Reagan, one of his 11 principles of a Reagan conservative, and this certainly applies to how he would implement foreign policy. peace through strength. That's obviously not original with Reagan, but it was something he certainly emphasized.
Yes, absolutely. And here again, I would apply that back to the Russians and Putin and Barack Obama. If Ronald Reagan, in fact, they have a quote in this book, which the book went to press, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months ago, and I had no idea how relevant this quote would be. Hmm. But Reagan said, the Russians respect strength, not weakness. He said, if you were going to approach the Russians with a dove of peace in one hand, you had to have a sword in the other.
Hmm.
So you had a dove and peace in one hand, but a sword in the other. He said, that's what the Russians responded to. With Barack Obama promising more flexibility after the election, going over there September 17, 2009, canceling the joint U.S. missile defense shield with Poland and the Czech Republic as a pro-Russian move. I mean, Obama has so accommodated the Russians and Putin that it's like he's gone to them with a dove of peace in one hand and a bouquet of roses in the other.
Well, and I think that's true with the radical Muslims as well. And that's why we have these problems. And by the way, speaking of that, didn't Ukraine, when it was independent and when it was striving to be independent from Russia, well, they're still striving to be independent from Russia, and those who are sympathetic with Russians are the ones who are accused now of downing this airplane. That's all but certain. But anyway, didn't the Ukrainians want to have a shield that would protect them from missiles? And Obama said no, and if they had had that shield, could that have prevented the tragedy?
I don't know if it could have prevented this particular tragedy, but yeah, they wanted that. They wanted to be members of NATO, and ironically, if they had been a member of NATO, if they had gotten what they wanted, then the Russians couldn't have acted against Crimea and couldn't be doing what they're doing in eastern Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
If they had been members of NATO, it would have really compelled Obama to respond completely differently. Now, on the other hand, this is why a lot of people said, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, longer than that, when we were considering adding Ukraine, that this is the danger of adding Ukraine, is that if you do, it does commit a future president to possibly go to war against the Russians in Ukraine, right? So that could commit you either way, but with Barack Obama, I'm sure he's more than relieved that he doesn't have a NATO commitment regarding Ukraine, because I honestly don't know how outraged he really is about Russian behavior there. If it really bothers him all that much, maybe he sees this as kind of an ancient Russian territorial claim that's gone on for a long time. There's a lot of people who see it that way, even a lot of conservatives. But Obama just never seems to get all that really upset about bad behavior of the Russians and bad behavior by Putin. Whereas he does get really upset at groups like Hobby Lobby, the Little Sisters of the Poor, and other people like that in the United States.
Isn't that amazing? By the way, I read somewhere that President Obama's mentor when he was a teenager was a communist. Oh, wait, it was in your book.
Right.
Yeah, the communist.
I almost just went into that, but I guess it will now. But Obama was, first of all, he's mentored by Frank Marshall Davis, and Frank Marshall Davis, I wrote a book on that called The Communist. Frank Marshall Davis was an actual card-carrying member of Communist Party USA.
What was his number?
His number was 47544. Know it off the top of my head. And Obama's mother and father actually met one another in a Russian language class at the University of Hawaii in the fall of 1960.
Wow.
So these two were taking the Russian language. Not because they wanted to learn Russian to go join the CIA and fight the Ruskies, right?
Yeah.
Because they were sympathetic to Russia. So Barack Obama was literally raised and mentored by people who would have told him, look, Barack, the Russians are not only not bad guys, the Russians are good guys. They have a system that we admire, and the bad guys are the United States. Obama really, truly would have been taught that.
Wow. All right, we have less than a minute to go. We've been kind of all over the place, but you could go ahead and say something, if you would, on your book again, 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. How about a 45-second closing statement from Dr. Paul Kanger?
Set, ready, set, go. Well, I have 11 principles in there. If you want to know what Ronald Reagan really believed, and about faith, freedom, family, marriage, sanctity and dignity of human life, peace through strength, all this stuff, and what a Reagan conservative really is, then check out this book.
I think Reagan has the answers for today, in as much as he looked toward God. In fact, Reagan once said,
That's
America
right.
is one nation under God, and if we ever forget it, we'll be one nation gone under. Dr. Paul Kanger, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, Jerry. Same here. Thanks.
Sure. Thank you. And again, the name of the book, 11 Principles of a Reagan Conservative. God bless. We'll be back in a moment with more Vocal Point.